Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another Commerce Talks podcast, all the way from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Today, we have Julie Samaha, who is the head of e-commerce at Tamimi Supermarkets chain. Julie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Lina. Thank you for having me, Lina and Alex, actually. And looking forward for a nice chat.
And I'm again here with my brilliant co-host, Alex.
Thank you, Lina.
Hello,
thank
Alex.
You, Lina. Thank you, Lina. So I'm letting you ask all the questions today because I've never been to Jeddah, where Julie is located today, and I've never shopped in one of her supermarkets or the supermarket she's working for. So maybe, Julie, you can explain a bit what kind of business you are actually in.
Sure, will do. Tamimi Markets actually is the supermarket business in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the Kingdom of Bahrain as well. We have 111 stores. It's one of the fastest growing supermarket chain here in KSA. And these 111 stores are across the central, eastern and west of Saudi Arabia. As well, Tamimi acquired Raya Supermarket very recently. And Raya as well is another chain of supermarkets in the Kingdom of Saudi based in the west. And with this acquisition, Tamimi accelerated their growth in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and especially in the west, where our presence was limited. So what I do in Tamimi is I handle the e-commerce business of Tamimi. And this includes our B2C one and as well our partnership with our marketplaces today. Alex, if you allow me a bit on myself as well. I joined Tamimi in 2018, 5.5 years so far, but it feels like 100, especially after COVID. And all this accelerated growth that happened after that. For Tamimi, I worked as well in Saudi in Jeddah. So since 2014, I worked for Abdul Wahid, an electronic retailer in the Kingdom of Saudi as well. Leading brands like Nikon, De'Longhi, and a portfolio of 40 brands, electronic brands in the kingdom. It was a startup. It was an e-commerce startup as well. I traveled to Saudi actually because my husband, he works here. It happened like 10 years so far, a very exciting journey, and it continues. Before that, I worked in Lebanon for 5 years with HSTCO. It's fashion retailer with as well a portfolio of 45 brands like Geox, Timberland, Springfield, Bugatti, and many more. I was handling the CRM department in 2009. So we created the first loyalty program back then in the Middle East. And 2010, we created the first e-gift card shopping as well website in Beirut, in Lebanon and Jordan. It was like a funny website where customer can create their own e-gift card and send it to their beloved one for them to shop from the brick and mortar stores. 2 years after that, we started our e-commerce journey. We created our app, website. So three startups so far, from fashion to electronics and then grocery.
So Frederic Levy Perrot, the CEO of Araya, was also in the Commerce Talks podcast, I do think 2 years ago, in the Dubai version of the Seamless conference. Can you... Yeah. Give us a bit more insights, like for the European listeners that know, like the supermarket structure in Europe. Is this comparable to what Tamimi is in KSA? So are supermarkets really focusing only on grocery, 400-500 square meters, or is it kind of a different business?
Yeah, so Tamimi format is 2,000 to 2,500 square meter supermarket, and our positioning is more on fresh, Alex. So we stand for the freshness of our produce at a very competitive prices. We source from local suppliers, definitely, proudly. And as well, we have the international supply of fresh produce and as well, many other categories. We have as well another format, which is a smaller one, 500 square meter, I can say. It's an express format. It's a convenient one, where we wanted to as well to serve the customers of some gated community in Saudi Arabia. So we have today a huge number of footprint coverage express markets. And Daya model is as well very similar to the Tamimi format. And the stores are located in the west of Saudi, 51 stores, and continue to grow as well.
Great, cool. Julie. So for the listeners, just maybe to when we are comparing it, for those of you that maybe live in the Middle East, you can look at Spinneys. So Tamimi is very similar to Spinneys when it comes to, I would say, quality over quantity, you know, and I can definitely confirm that, Julie, that their fresh assortment, you know, doesn't compare with probably any of their competitors. So, like, they have definitely leaders in that space. And then on top of it, for the European listeners, it's kind of similar to Waitrose, kind of like the UK chain, similar to Sainsbury's that you can compare in UK. In Germany, it's definitely not a Lidl and it's definitely not an Aldi, but whatever the fancy supermarket you have in Germany, it's probably compared to that. So Julie, like, very interesting. I would say most of the listeners here would say female in Saudi, head of e-commerce in a very, very traditional retail store. So tell us more about maybe the culture in general of the company, and what does it mean e-commerce for you as a very traditional and well-established grocery market in the kingdom?
Sure. So, Lina, to start with, I'm one of the very first adopters of the e-commerce. So back in 2009, 10, 12, after that, when we started to hear more about it. So I have a passion when it comes to creating the model and activating it, especially in traditional marketplace. So when I joined Tamimi as well, we wanted to create something unique. We wanted to create something that is not so much a replica of the other e-commerce channels available in the kingdom. So we wanted as well to serve the community in a healthier way, in a more sustainable way. And this is why we created the concept of click and collect. So it wasn't easy. It was very challenging because all around you is like home delivery. And now you're coming to tell us that, okay, no, click and collect is faster. It's a more convenient one. How comes? So especially as well back in 2019, if you recall, the market share of e-grocery specifically was nothing, 0.4% in Saudi versus, I think, in the West, in your place, Alex, maybe about 2.5 to 3% back then. So it was very challenging. Yet we emphasized always on the fact that we want to serve you in a healthier way every day. So we want to offer convenience instead of a service that might take 3 hours with all the logistics challenges to get delivered to your doorstep. So click and collect was in an hour basically fulfilled service. So you order, you can come and collect from your nearest shop in an hour. It's free of charge. It was very seamless experience. In some location, we built a drive-through model. And I faced many challenges when I was, you know, trying to get the permits of these locations, trying to build an extension to the store so I can create this drive-through experience overall. It wasn't easy. And in some location, we were able to do it. In some other location, it was mainly a curbside pickup, similar to the Walmart curbside pickup. And this is because of the restriction that we faced in the location itself. Some had a small parking where we couldn't even do the curbside pickup, and we had instead to create a booth inside the lobby of the supermarket where customer can come in and collect his goods. The growth that we seen was amazing. So we're still seeing 22% growth year over year. Customer retention is as well growing in percentage. Customers are very satisfied, and you need, Lina, also to consider that we are in a market where there is a lot of drivers roaming around. You know that females maybe recently, the past 5 years, started to drive, and before that, there was only drivers around plus the males of the families who take care of all these, shopping activities. So we thought that our segment, the segment that we cater for, will be interested more in our collection, having drivers, especially after as well, females who started to drive in 2018 started to work. So we were selling the concept of on your way back home, come and collect. We were selling the concept of busy mom who is not able to, let's say, to move around because of her work or because of the kids in the house. So we were just telling them at your convenience, come and collect. There is no minimum order amount. There is no restriction. There is just an hour for you to get your goods and free of charge, where the other channels were imposing delivery fees. It started at 48 hours at the early stage and then 24 hours and then evolved. We think that this business will continue to grow. We think that a lot of opportunities are there. And we are now trying to cover all our footprint in Saudi with click and collect stores. We have today 35 locations where you can come and collect from. And that's on top of the other affiliation that we've done.
Mm-hmm. And there I would have a question, because you're saying that like this click and collect or curbside pickup, as it is called in the US, is one of the main models that's working for you. So how does it work operationally? Do you have like fulfillers in the store, or do you have like dark warehouses that maybe are next to a store where this kind of picking and collection is done? Because obviously if you want to do like full-fledged like e-commerce experience, this only works in a perfect organized warehouse with a high degree of automation, right? But how have you built it up?
So, Alex, it's from a brick and mortar store. So we have an operation, dedicated operation for online in the stores where we have the click and collect center or hub. These pickers receive the order on spot. They pick, they pack, they place the order in the same hub where the customer comes in to collect. So the customer journey of collection is about 3 minutes. Now, yes, the challenges that you mentioned are still there, but with the emerging technologies, we're trying to enhance the scope, especially when it comes to availability, Alex. So, when it comes to a brick and mortar store with walk-in customers around, it's very challenging to fulfill the full orders, 100% of the order. So you end up with, let's say, 90 to 92% fill rate, and you try to offer substitution in order to compensate this loss in sales and as well provide a better experience to the customer. Now, we know that the only solution would be to have 100% fulfillment ratio is definitely dark stores, what you've mentioned. But because of the 1 hour model, because of the convenience of the speed of the collection, we think that the faster way today, operationally and logistically, is to continue doing the click and collect from the brick and mortar store and environment itself. While for the other marketplace affiliations, for the next home delivery service that we will activate soon as well, we know that the dark store is a must. We had our first fulfillment center in Riyadh, in the Rabwa area. And this FC served all the three channels that I mentioned. So some local and international marketplace as well, where we fulfill their orders from this FC. On top of our definitely coming home delivery, this is just to make sure we satisfy the demand with a high availability percentage.
So Julie, you mentioned that you guys continue growing like 22% up, year over year. And of course, with the growth, the challenges, as Alex mentioned, operationally comes in dark stores, and how do you fulfill it out of stocks? And actually, how do you ensure the experience within the supermarkets of customers that are shopping, because you cannot put like 100 pickers running around and cleaning the shelves for the consumer, right? But so switching to that sort of consumer and, you know, kind of acquisition and retention, Saudi is growing. You are seeing more and more aggregators coming online. New startups are kind of grabbing your market share. And you mentioned, you know, over 100 stores. So you have your own challenges before you even probably consider about challenges that competitors cause you, right? So can you share with listeners more about the maybe some interesting techniques you guys done, you know, to retain the customer, what keeps them coming back, and maybe some unique elements, what do you do to acquire them? Is it all paid advertisement or like activities with sort of influencers, or what works? So if you can touch on acquisition and retention.
Sure. So Lina, for me, competition is always healthy. Competition fuel our innovation. So the way we think to evolve. So I'll answer you first on the how we retain our customers. We make sure that we provide a unique experience in all our channels. So whether you're shopping offline and online, you should find the same products, right? To start with, because end of day, we supply groceries. So first is the assortment should be healthy enough for your customers, whether he's shopping online or offline. Availability is another area where we believe that it impacts directly the retention, because end of day, if customer was not satisfied, didn't find his product, he will shift to another retailer or e-retailer, because especially in online, you have just a microsecond for you to get the chance of a customer to buy online channel. So you might lose him if you don't have the right product and the available product online. So you can't just push a channel with high out of stock items as an example. So I think what is unique on top of all this is our mission and our vision, because we always believe in serving the customer as if we're serving our family. So we believe that the uniqueness in what we do is in the way we treat the customer, and the customer experience and the customer high level of service that he's taking, whether he's shopping offline or online. It's all about, you know, creating a nice, engaged, happy environment for your customer to feel comfortable to be in, whether offline or online. It's all about selling this feeling of, okay, we care. We're providing the best because we care. Right. So I think this is how we retain, and we acquire as well in a very similar manner, because one is word of mouth, Lina, that helps big time today. The customer brings two or three other customers to shop from Tamimi Markets. Why? Because his satisfaction level is very high, knowing the standards that we have and what we always try to offer. And it's still evolving. We use a lot of technology to understand this customer, to be relevant to this customer, because it makes no sense if now, Lina, you go online and you open the page and you find like litter product, for example, while you don't have a pet and you never shopped in Tamimi for any pet food item or even a pet non-food item. So we try our best to be relevant, to have a personalized experience all over our channels. And this only happens because we centralize our data. We read the customer from a center view look. So we understand what to show him, what not to show him, what to offer him, what not to offer him. Even the text notification that you receive or the push notification on the app is very much personalized. So we target you with the right product, because we want you to shop and find your product very fast and leave satisfied without wasting an hour just in searching for results that you might not be as well interested to buy. So we read from your activities online, we read from your activities offline, and we create a one kind of centralized hub, utilizing machine learning, utilizing one frame of tech in order to give you really what you want to buy. If you're searching for a milk product, it doesn't make sense that I show you Formula One, because I know that you never shop the baby food item. So it's very much a complex. I don't want to say we're perfect when it comes to implementing all the emerging technologies active today in our world, but we are trying always our best to enhance the system on the go with what is relevant to our business. Because we believe that having irrelevant tech would directly be a disruption to the model. So instead of helping you, it will maybe kill the whole channel. So we're very cautious in what to select and when to select it.
So, So I understand like the service philosophy. Maybe can you give us a broader picture on like the competitive situation? Is it a bit like in Europe where like last 2-3 years we saw a spike in quick commerce, which is now all gone, I would say, because they had a very hard time to earn money. You might have seen the Getir numbers last week. They announced like 3 billion in revenue with an 800 million loss. So obviously it's not so much profitable business. And there are some businesses, especially Picnic and Knusper, that are following a more conservative principle where there are outside companies really focusing on the pure online experience, delivering like door to door with a super efficient logistics setup. That's kind of the new competition supermarkets are facing in Europe, and they are growing. Their share is growing. They're starting even in the outskirts, not the bigger cities. Is it a similar situation in KSA or as a customer, do I have any choice to shop elsewhere in order to get like the full grocery assortment? Can you give us some competitive insights here?
Sure. So Alex, I can tell that what happened 3 years back in the West happened last year in Saudi. So last year we saw the rise of quick commerce model. Some giants came into the market and they're trying to compete in providing the customer with a fast service, let's say 15, 20, or a max of 30-minute delivery. And this is by itself very challenging because, you know, Riyadh City is, you visited probably Lina a couple of times, Riyadh, and you know how much is crowded and how much it's very difficult to reach a 10-kilometer distant location because of the high traffic. So imagine when it comes to quick commerce with all these challenges in place. The players are doing their best. They're enhancing or fueling their customer overall online experience with technology in order to speed up the whole picking process, the whole inventory management process. So they can just pick and pack in, like, let's say 1, 2, 3 minutes. And then the rest is just to deliver the product on time to the customer. It's going to continue to grow, Alex, I think, in the next couple of years in Saudi. Yet on profitability, I totally agree on what you mentioned. You will end up with huge costs, actually, when it comes to the operational one, the logistics one. And that's, of course, on top of your tech investment. Profitable with such a low basket value? I don't think so. Especially that all these players, in order to grow, they're buying the sales, they're selling crazy prices at some stages. Let's say 1 riyal offers. I can say that the delivery fees in most of the time is free of charge. It's very challenging. And I don't see a sustainability here. So I think what is happening in the West today is going to happen in Saudi in 2 years' time. The same cycle. Again.
Okay, I have one more question on this. Can you tell us a bit more about the salary structure in Saudi? Because like one thing which is making delivery super hard in Europe is there's actually not enough young people or people with like low salaries that are willing to do the job. So they had to charge like 20-25 euros an hour for deliveries, which is actually, it's very hard to make money in this kind of salary range. Is this different in Saudi? So do you have enough people for cheap logistics, I would say, or are you facing the same situation there?
I think, Alec, because the size of it, it's still not the size of the European market. It's still okay, but I don't see it sustainable in the long run. Today, the drivers that you receive your goods from are mainly expats. Their salaries as well are, I think, averaging between 1,500 to 2,000 riyal. And it's very challenging to hire from the local workforce because the salary as well is one of the main reason. So I think that in a year, we will have to look at more sustainable solution toward the logistics sector when it comes to last mile delivery, with the rise of as well the other operational costs like the fuel, as an example, the shortage in the vehicles, specifically due to all the challenges that we are having today in the Red Sea. So yeah, I think it's not going to be easy. And what you are facing in the West today will be mirrored in here in the GCC in a year time or two max.
Very interesting, Julie. And sort of coming towards the end of the podcast, I want to ask you one question around like summarizing everything you said. So if we assume that, you know, word of mouth is still very important, people appreciate service and a brand identity over anything else, if we assume that service is very important and the ability to access to that assortment is critical if you want to succeed in the market. And as, you know, kind of from the market, everyone's saying the rents are getting expensive, Saudization rules coming in, and in general, price of doing business is going up and up and up. What would be your advice, you know, for, you know, so obviously Saudi is all over the news nowadays. What would be your advice, you know, for maybe some Western or Eastern even brands or names trying to enter the Saudi Arabia? Is it easy to come in? And if you have to come in, what would be your kind of tips, you know, where to start?
Yeah, Lina, it's a huge market full of opportunities. And definitely I encourage investing in this market because we know and we believe that it continued to grow in a very healthy manner. And there is a room for everyone still at this stage to grab a share. Now, my advice would be always think local. So many brands came in with their own Western culture. They missed the fact of talking the language of the customer. Many of these brands didn't even have, let's say, an Arabic version of their application or website. Even the ones that who had this kind of Arabic version of the channel didn't really optimize it in a good way. And they faced many challenges because, you know, when it comes to Arabic, Lina, there is many accents. There is many way of writing one word, because if I'm from Qassim, I would say it in a way. If I'm from Dammam or Khobar, I would say it in a different way and write it in a different way. So your tech should be smart enough, and you have to be smart enough to, in order to optimize well and be relevant to your customer, so you understand what is he searching for and you give him a relevant result. So always think local. That would be my advice. Build your Arabic page before thinking English. Don't just use the replica style of business approach. Be unique. Be unique in what you are bringing to the market, because it's very important to sell something different if you really want to stand and be positioned in a place where nobody else can take anything from you or risk your business. So to wrap it up, I would say be relevant, speak local, and be unconventional.
Brilliant. Brilliant closing thoughts. Alex, any final thoughts, questions?
I definitely have to go to Jeddah.
I'm looking forward to it, Alex. You will love Jeddah. You will love it, definitely. See, every city in Saudi has a special taste, different food, different style of entertainment. And nowadays, here in Jeddah, for example, there are many events in Riyadh. It's booming. Lina, I'm not sure if you visited any of the Riyadh events, but I would definitely say it's a very different level, Alex. And you really must try. You'll love it.
Cool.
We will do a trip, Alex, when you're here, when you have to come to the Gulf again.
Thank you. Just let me know when you plan it, and the rest on me.
Thank you.